in 3, 2, 1. Hi, everybody. Welcome back.
Wow. This feels weird. I feel out of, like I'm rusty, you know?
Oh, we're incredibly rusty. Welcome to the Caffeinated Theology Podcast, where myself, Hayden Troll, and my friend David Bernal, we're going through the Bible piece by piece, chronological order, inside of a coffee shop.
Hey.
As we drink coffee.
Best place to do it.
Caffeinated Theology. Yeah, it's been a while. Life has thrown us some curveballs in the last couple of weeks.
It's been a few weeks, huh?
It's been a few weeks. Yeah. We're also starting to restructure how we record. It just was not super efficient. So David has brought on Tyler Wellman to cover for him.
TylerWellman96 on Instagram.
That's anything you want to say to the friends, Tyler?
Come on in. Anytime you're ready, we'll try to make some good coffee.
Yeah.
We will make some good coffee.
Like Yoda says, there is no try, only do.
That's right.
Awesome. So, I am glad to be back. Let's jump into it. So,
let's do it.
We had just finished the whole prologue to Genesis, which is also the prologue to the whole biblical narrative.
Yeah, a great place to pause.
Yeah,
it
was a natural place for us to take a break. We didn't plan it that way, but
it worked out.
It worked out really well.
God's hand is on this podcast.
I feel God in this Chili's tonight. All right, so David is going to give his 3-minute abbreviated recap of everything so far. So, David, how are you feeling? Are you ready for this?
Yeah, as ready as I can be, I think.
All right, you are on the clock, my friend.
All right, guys, so 3 minutes. What have we gone through so far? Well, we opened up in Genesis 1, where the seed is a dark and formless earth, and God creates order out of this kind of disordered chaos and brings life to it. Fruits, vegetation, plants, animals, and finally, human beings created out of the dust in the image of God to reflect God's nature to the world. And so he places these humans in the garden in Eden, which is symbolic of them being like these king priests who are meant to rule with God and expand his will into the earth and take care of him. Things go bad. The first next generation of humans, the kids, actually no, the first generation messes up too. They get kicked out of the garden. Next generation messes up. And there's this just cycle of humans messing up. All the while, there's a promise from God that one day, from the seed of the woman, the evil is finally going to be crushed, and God will, like, his ultimate perfect rule will be enacted in the earth. And so we're kind of left in this, like, back and forth pool of, like, oh, like, when is it going to happen? We see Noah come. His name means relief. So we think, is this guy going to bring relief to the earth? And then, lo and behold, flood comes, wipes out everything. Noah starts afresh, basically a new Adam and Eve. But still, again, bad things happen. And it's just this cycle of humans not pursuing the will of God, trying to build their own cities and dominion in place of God. And things just go bad. And forget kind of where we, I think we just end, the last story was
Babel.
And so after Babel, we just see this kind of pinnacle of another way that things can go wrong, where there's this like hyper order state that tries to replace God, and ultimately God breaks that down and scatters them across the earth, confuses the languages, and then we just zoom into a generation of Terah. That leads to Abram, which is going to be the main character in the next section, right?
Wonderful. That was
that 3 minutes?
It was less than 3 minutes.
Woo!
You're getting better at this, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, so we have seen the conflict set up. God has created a good and ordered world in which humans are to partake in that. And what happens when they introduce disorder? What is God going to do in all that? So we are going forward with the Abraham story. Abraham is another felt board character that I feel like we can really create a shallow understanding of.
Just Father Abraham
and many sons. And many sons had Father Abraham.
Yeah, I don't know the rest.
I don't either, actually. I remember we had like little maracas in my church that we would like.
That's awesome.
It's like VBS. We made like little maracas and we would like
sing the song.
Yep. That's all I remember. So Your understanding, how long has it been since you've actually read the Abraham narrative?
Like all the way through?
All the way through.
It's been a few years, like probably like 5 years. Yeah.
Do you remember any big takeaways from that?
Yeah. Just like realizing, like, okay, this guy, like, he became quite wealthy and powerful. Like, he had tons of people under him and, like, in his clan, you know? And I just always been fascinated by the story, this idea of, like, some man in the desert just, like, picking up and, like, I'm going to move because I feel like God is telling me to go here, not knowing really where he's going, and just, like, navigating this crazy world. All the while, he has these, like, fun encounters. It just seems like his life is kind of like a little, like, adventure video game, you know?
Yeah, and he's, like, the perfect faithful person.
Yeah, not quite.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So, yeah, you ready to jump in?
Yeah, let's just do it.
Let's do it.
Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran fathered Lot. And Haran died in the presence of Terah, his father, in the land of his birth in Ur of the Chaldeans. And Abram and Nahor took wives for themselves. The name of the wife of Abram was Sarai, and the name of the wife of Nahor was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. And Sarai was barren, she had no children. And Terah took Abram his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, the wife of Abram, his son, and went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan. And they went to Haran, and they settled there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. And Yahweh said to Abram, go out from your land and from your relatives and from the house of your father to the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and those who curse you I will curse. And all families of the earth will be blessed in you. And Abram went out as Yahweh had told him, and Lot went with him. Now Abram was 75 years old when he went out from Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and all the persons that they had acquired in Haran. And they went out to go to the land of Canaan. And they went to the land of Canaan. And Abram traveled through the land up to the place of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. Now the Canaanites were in the land at that time. And Yahweh appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. And he built an altar there to Yahweh, who had appeared to him. He moved on from there to the hill country east of Bethel. And he pitched his tent at Bethel on the west, and at Ai on the east. And he built an altar there to Yahweh. And he called on the name of Yahweh. And Abram kept moving toward the Negev. And there was a famine in the land. And Abram went down to Egypt to dwell as an alien there, for the famine was severe in the land. And it happened that as he drew near to enter into Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, look, I know that you are a woman beautiful of appearance. And it shall happen that if the Egyptians see you, then they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but let you live. Please say you are my sister so that it will go well with me on your account. Then I will live on account of you. And it happened that as Abram came into Egypt, the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. And the officials of Pharaoh saw her, and they praised her beauty to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to the house of Pharaoh. And he dealt with Abram on account of her, and he had sheep, cattle, male donkeys, male slaves, female donkeys, and camels. Then Yahweh afflicted Pharaoh and his household with severe plagues on account of the matter of Sarai, the wife of Abram. Then Pharaoh called for Abram and said, what is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her to myself as a wife? Now then, here is your wife, take her and go. And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and then sent him and his wife and all that was with him away. Then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that was with him. And Lot went with him to the Negev. And Abram was very wealthy in livestock, in silver and in gold. And he went according to his journey from the Negev, then to Bethel, to the place where his tent was at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar at the beginning. And Abram called on the name of Yahweh there.
So that was one of the shorter segments you've read in the recent past of our podcast.
Yes, I did it without even drinking any water. And
yeah,
I only stuttered like 3 times.
Yeah, usually it's been like 8 minutes to record a segment of reading scripture, and David's always like wore out
by
the end of it.
I usually like take a quick nap after. Like,
that's usually minutes. When we stop and like come back the next day. Yeah, so what are your initial thoughts after reading that?
I'm like, interesting plan, Abram. Like, to your wife, be like, just pretend that you're my sister so that, like, they don't kill me. Probably knew that, like, they'd be like, oh, well, let's take her as a wife. So it's basically like...
It's pretty shady.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and jump in. This story is really the hinge piece of what's happening in the ancient Israelite perspective. So Abram is the hinge between the primeval world and the Israelites' present world.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's like he is from the seed of the woman. And he's come from the good line because, you know, we've had these genealogies that have split off and we'll get the bad genealogy first and then the story will, like, rewind and come back and then start another genealogy.
Yeah, and we're kind of going from, like, what we just read in the prologue is more like the setting and location and time, it's a little bit more, like, mysterious. It's not set precisely in, like, a history. It's more just, like, the Jewish mythology type thing. And then now we're moving to, like, a specific person, and it's written more as, like, a biographical account with, like, names of places and people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's talk about the etymology of Abram's name. Have you heard? Etymology. Do you know what that is?
Etymology?
For the people who might not know what that is.
That's what they give you at sushi restaurants before, with a little salt, little soybeans, right?
No.
Etymology?
Good try, though.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. Etymology is what a word means. Like,
yeah, just what it means. And with the Israelites, names don't just happen on accident. Mm-hmm. Like, my name is Hayden, and I think my parents just liked the way it sounded, so that's my name. But
yeah. Actually, I don't know if you know this, but your name was Dan originally, and they kept saying, "Hey, Dan," and you
it just morphed into
Hayden. Yeah.
I'm glad you know that, and I don't. But yeah, so names mean something. Names of towns mean something. Names of places mean something. Mm-hmm. There's nothing random. And so Abram, who is not Abraham yet, so I'm going to try to resist the urge to call him Abraham until we actually get to that point.
Right.
He's Abram right now.
No H in there.
No H in there. Abram means high father. So think of the word Abba.
Yeah.
Like Abraham.
That makes sense. I never put that together.
Abraham. Yeah.
So you think Abba comes from Abram?
It does.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I thought it was just like baby babbling, like Abba, Abba.
Yeah, that's Abba comes from that.
Okay.
And then Sarai means princess.
Oh.
So going back to like when we talked about Noah and his name meaning relief, or even Adam, whose name just means humans, I believe that they were real figures, but I do think the story is choosing names that maybe they didn't go by to like serve a theological purpose.
Yeah, I mean, 100% the names are serving a theological purpose, mm-hmm. No doubt.
Yeah, and the other thing that's really interesting about Abram is when we were in chapter 11, at the very end, it says that he's from the Chaldeans. And do you know who the Chaldeans were?
No, I've read some interesting things, but I don't know.
So the Chaldeans were Babylonians. So transport ourselves a little bit in the future. If we're coming from the thesis that the Old Testament was compiled while the Israelites were in exile in Babylon, living under the Babylonian thumb and rule and oppression, what does that mean that their ancestor is a Babylonian?
Basically, like they're metaphorically or theologically placing the current situation of the Israelites alongside what's going on with Abram,
mm-hmm.
Right?
I would say so. I think it's one of those things where it's like, I think it's one of those, it's like a well that you can just keep going back to, because it's like, okay, the Israelites are this distinct group under the rule of Babylonians, but somewhere in the distant past, like their ancestry and heritage started in this Babylonian era.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really pieced all that together yet, but I think there's something interesting there that...
Yeah, it makes sense, and it's like at the same time it's just like metaphorical, like good and evil, right? Like good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you got Abram, you got the Chaldeans, and you got the Israelites and the Canaanites, and then you got the current situation of when this was compiled with the Israelites and the Babylonians. It's like showing that it's kind of trying to mirror the current situation of the people to give them hope in mm-hmm. that situation. Like, God is still working. The same way that he was working with Abraham, or Abram, he's working in the Israelites now.
Yeah. He took Abraham out of Babylon to the promised land.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to do it again.
Yeah. Hmm. I like that. What?
I'll see you do it again.
Yeah, and so Abraham, seemingly insignificant in the story, it's kind of almost like a throwaway line because it starts with Terah. These are the lines of Terah, and it names his three sons and mm-hmm. the one nephew or the one grandson. What?
I think Terah gets fleshed out a little bit more in some like
Second Temple.
Yeah, like they kind of muse on him a little bit more.
Yeah, there's I know in those he's like a super like polytheistic pagan.
Yeah, that's kind of like always what I heard, but there's not really much about him like in Genesis about that.
Yeah, there's nothing in Genesis that tells you what his religious background was.
Yeah, but somehow I did get that in my head that like Terah was this like polytheist, had a bunch of idols, and Abraham left that to be a monotheist.
Well, I mean, you flash forward a little bit, like the Isaac story when he goes and or it might be Jacob, I don't remember, one of the two, they go and they're courting another descendant of Terah.
Yeah.
And they do have idols.
That's right. The whole thing. Love you, Alex.
See you.
Shout out to Alex.
Shout out to Alex, who's been silently supporting us over here. So there was idol worship within their family line.
Yeah.
So it's like, I guess we can imply that there probably was that came from somewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. We are planning to get into Second Temple literature at some point, so yeah. Stay tuned 6 years down the road.
Yeah, we're not scared of any of that stuff that's outside the Bible.
No, not at all. And so we have a problem set up within the primordial narrative. It's humans keep taking from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and bad things happen there. And so God has pretty much dealt with humanity as a whole in the story. But what we're seeing now is that God is narrowing his focus for his plan to go forward so that disorder can become ordered again.
Yeah, which again is like a theme that we're going to see throughout the entire story mm-hmm. of God like setting apart a people or a person to bless the entire nation or the entire earth.
Mm-hmm. And the author intends to picture Abram's call as God's gift in the midst of judgment. So Abram is marking the new beginning, just like Genesis chapter 1, yep. In the beginning, right here, we're getting another timestamp. Here is a new beginning mm-hmm. again. So can you read the promise again, which is it's just 12, like 1-3.
Yeah. Yahweh said to Abram, "Go out from your land and from your relatives and from the house of your father to the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great. And you will be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and those who curse you I will curse. And all families of the earth will be blessed in you."
Awesome. So this promise to Abram from Yahweh is a reiteration of the original blessing to humankind to be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah.
And through that now we have these fallen nations, because remember at the end of the Babel story, that was when God disowned the nations.
Yep.
And gave them over to lesser spiritual beings.
Yep.
And he's saying, at some point, Abram, your line, your family line is going to be the vehicle through which all other nations will come back to me one day.
Yeah.
It's going to be through Abram's seed, which Abram's seed is also from...
all the way from Adam.
From the woman's seed.
Yeah.
So that's continuing. And so Yahweh is going to leave Abram a legacy. But it's coming from Yahweh this time, which is supposed to be a contrast to the Babel story.
Where it was... they were trying to do it from... humans themselves.
Mm-hmm. They wanted to leave a legacy, but the way they went about it was self-defeating.
Yeah.
And this blessing is both spiritual and material.
Yeah, because Abram was super blessed. Like,
yeah, well, it says, go out from your land and from your relatives. So he's leaving home. from the house of your father. He's leaving his father into the land I will show you. So there's land promise that's physical. Mm-hmm. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you. And I will make
like
you
a physical.
Yeah.
Thing.
And I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. So spiritual.
Yeah.
And I will bless those who bless you, and who curse you, I will curse. And all families of the earth will be blessed through you. Mm-hmm. So it's twofold. It's like land and a family. Mm-hmm. That's the two things promised. It's showing that God is not giving up on humanity, because you kind of close this end of the story of Babel and it's like things don't seem like they're getting any better.
Right. And it kind of ends with God like scattering them. So
yeah.
It seems like...
Is he done?
Like, yeah, maybe he's like, hands off.
Mm-hmm. And then it's the other significant thing is, I know growing up in church we've held Abraham as this pinnacle of faith. But if you kind of read Yahweh appearing to Abram, Abram didn't do anything beforehand to deserve that.
Mm-hmm.
Or it doesn't indicate that he did.
Right. It doesn't tell us why Abram was chosen in the story, just that he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Abram is... initially, he's all about it. Abram takes Yahweh at his word. And I've always wondered this, like, living in this time, did Abram, when Yahweh appeared to him and made this promise, did he really have any clue who he was dealing with at the time? Or was it kind of this mysterious, like, it didn't really say how, did it come in a dream? Did it come, like, in physical form? Was it, like, a feeling? Like, where did that come from?
Right, and I think they leave it open to interpretation for a reason.
Because it's like, was he aware that this was the God of the universe, or did he think it was just a petty deity that he was used to, if he did come from a family of, like, polytheistic idol worship, where you had, like, a household god who you had to keep happy all the time?
Yeah, and I think you can picture it different ways. The way that I picture it now when I read the story is actually more of just, like, him not even, like... Not like Yahweh appeared as some physical form and spoke to him, but I picture it more as just like an inward feeling. Like he just had this conviction that like he just trusted, like there is a force out there, there is God, and like he's telling me to leave here and go. And just like going on faith. And so I could see how in that sense he would be regarded for his faith because trusting the feeling.
Yeah. And then I'm beginning to think of like along the lines of him not even knowing this was the creator of the universe, but like sensing that there was something trustworthy in the promise itself.
Yeah.
And not really fully understanding what he was getting himself into, because like we like to think we understand God really well with all our theological like books and like how systematic we make everything. But it's still such a big mystery.
Yeah.
Like we don't know who we're dealing with. In a really broad sense.
Yeah, totally.
And this is like it's a big promise. Like, if someone were to tell you, like, hey, David, like, through your line and through Zepha, like, all of Forest City will be blessed.
Hey, I think you're not wrong there.
Yeah, I mean, Zepha's perfect. But he goes to Canaan. He's being sent to the land of Canaan. We know Canaan from the Noah story.
Right.
And Canaan is not a good place right now. And narratively is not good.
Mm-hmm.
But Abram takes everything and he goes. And travel in this time is not an easy thing to do.
Not at all.
It's dangerous. You have to think about food. He's not traveling just as like...
Did Pete tell you about this order over here?
Yes.
Okay.
Two.
I'll pick some head out. Yeah, he's got a raft.
Cool.
Actually, one. I think one lady come and got hers before I closed her issue.
Awesome.
I'm out of here.
All right. Well, you've earned it. You have a good weekend.
We are recording this on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
But he... And Canaan is not close to Ur at all either.
Mm-hmm.
Or he could have left him from Haran. That's kind of a scholarly debate. Did he leave from Ur? Did he leave from Haran? Either way, they're not close.
I think the point is just that like, it's a big journey.
It's a big journey. But he goes, and he's just chilling by the Oak of Moreh, and that is translated, Moreh means the master teacher.
And
so he is...
The Oak of Master Teacher?
The Tree of the Master Teacher.
That's amazing. Like, why don't they just translate it like that?
Sounds a lot better, doesn't
it?
Yeah,
definitely.
So basically it's like... Abram is perched up by the tree of the master teacher, and it does say this time that Yahweh physically appears to him. Mm. And so that's in verse 7. So as he's at the tree of the master teacher, Yahweh appears to Abram and says, "To your offspring I will give this land." And Abram builds an altar there because Yahweh appeared to him.
But he keeps moving.
Yeah, let's slow down and think about that though. Mm-hmm. Like, so Yahweh appears at the Oak of the Master Teacher. There's something there. I don't know what it is.
I think it's showing that like Yahweh is the Master Teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like he's not just a distant, hands-off creator, but like actively working in people's hearts to like teach them how to live.
And it is like. Yahweh obviously is not confined to the Promised Land, but it does seem like he operates in a different way within it. Because it seems like these are the only places where he appears physically to people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's something to be said about that.
Maybe.
And then Abraham goes on, or Abram goes on, to the hill country of Bethel. We call it Bethel, but Bethel is, it's actually two words, it's Bet and El, and we have transliterated it to Bethel.
And we should always be on the lookout for words that end in El.
Yes.
That means God.
Which is like half of every Hebrew name.
Yeah.
Daniel.
Yep. Israel.
Israel, yes.
Mikael.
Mikael. David El.
Yeah.
And so the Bet comes from the Hebrew word Bayet, which means dwelling place. Which is a temple.
Yeah, so dwelling place of God.
Yep, and El means God. And so what this is he's saying at Bethel, this altar he builds is a portal between the heavenly realm and...
Yeah, and we're going to see the same thing
cosmic,
Jacob.
Cosmic portals, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool concept. But the account is selective here. So there's three sites mentioned in chapter 12. You've got Shechem, you've got Ai, and you've got Bethel.
Okay.
These are the three sites mentioned in the Joshua conquest narrative.
Oh, when they're going through and driving out the Canaanites, they come to Shechem, Ai, and Bethel.
Yeah.
Interesting. So they're kind of setting the foundation, like this is the land that they're going to...
Yeah, symbolically, the conquest is happening without the conquest.
Well, so it's like a promised conquest, right?
Mm-hmm. Because it hadn't happened yet.
But he's going to the places,
mm-hmm.
mapping them out for a later time when they come in.
Mm-hmm. And this is not simple history. What the author is doing here is teaching religion and heritage, signaling key relationships with ancient tradition to show its meaning. And so the deeds of the father are prefiguring the deeds of the descendants. What do you think about that?
It's deep, man.
We needed that deep button that we can just like hit.
That's deep.
That's deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... And that's where it's like talking about the biblical narrative as literature. People, I think there's so much you lose out on when you don't think about the fact that like... I think that actually makes you want to worship God more because it's like...
Well, yeah, because you appreciate the complexities and the layers. And another layer that I've kind of have like put onto this story, like in recent years, is also how it kind of maps like the personal journey of, I think, that a lot of us experience as humans, and like a transformation that we experience kind of like as we more move like with the Spirit of God in our lives. You know, we all kind of have this base nature that is kind of like selfish and mean, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, we invite the Spirit of God into our lives, and we kind of learn how to navigate from that place into being like more of a reflection of God. Mm-hmm. So if you kind of parallel that with like the Promised Land and these like bad habits as like the Canaanites and people that are there, like mm-hmm. we can see the promise like in the person of Jesus, and we like move to like rid ourselves of those things as we inhabit the promised land.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, I think there's something to say about like rhythm and just rhythm in general. Because I do think that history does tend to repeat itself in so many ways.
Yeah.
And our lives repeat ourselves over and over. Like,
yeah. Personally, and then like, you know, people have kids and like generations, like things repeat themselves.
Yeah, and I think people end up being more like their parents than they would like to realize, and and then basically your children carry on who you were.
Yeah.
Which is scary to think about.
Yeah. And if that's from like a bad place, then it's like the call of God is like to Abram, it's like leave the place of your fathers and go to the promised land.
Yeah. David is like the ultimate mystic.
I'm actually like levitating right now. You just can't see.
It's pretty amazing. He's got like floating rocks behind him. And
I got like 3 feet of air that time.
Yeah, that's. I'm scared. Come help. So right now, Abram's doing great. Like he is the pinnacle of faith right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's trusted God. He's this old man, which
yeah,
is like
how old was he again?
75 years old when he left from Haran.
That's a new 40.
That is like, yeah. I forget how old. He's like in his mid-100s when he does.
That's not bad. Good
good long
life.
So
lots of exercise walking around.
Yeah, so he's been promised two things, like the land and the family.
Yeah.
But no family, no land. So basically we're waiting on this family to come before the land ever really becomes like... He's in Canaan, but he is not of Canaan.
Yeah. Yet.
So he's this wanderer, which is actually what we get the word Hebrew from.
Oh, you get the word Hebrew from wandering?
Yeah, so like Abram's the first person they call a Hebrew.
Ah.
And a Hebrew, we'll get to this when they actually call him a Hebrew, but Hebrew is a wanderer or somebody without a home.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So we're about to get another rhythm to begin. Famine hits. There's no rainfall. I don't know if you've ever really seen pictures or talked to anybody who's been to like the Israel Judeo land, but there's not a lot of water there.
No, it just looks very sand, like that sand color. Everything's just kind of sand.
Yeah, you have the Jordan River and you've got the Sea of Galilee, but then you get to the Dead Sea, which is like, it's water, but it's not helpful, like giving water in the least. And this is an agrarian society where it's shepherding and farming. That's like the two big things. And when there's no rain, people die.
Yeah.
So Abraham takes his family to Egypt because Egypt has the Nile.
Yep.
The Nile does not need that much rainfall. And so they're going to a place where there will be plenty. And Abram goes as a gar. That's what the Hebrew word is.
What does that mean?
It means a protected refugee.
Okay.
So he takes his family. They go to Egypt for food. They're still childless right now, so we got to keep that in the back of our head. So
yeah, they got a ton of slaves and sheep, but
And so now we got to start thinking, like, it didn't tell us how much time has passed, but it's like, okay, we went to the promised land, Yahweh, where's my child at?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, we can't live here anymore. It's like unlivable.
Yeah.
So maybe Abram is starting to doubt.
It would make sense. It'd be natural.
It's like, wow, I'm not seeing this come true, and I'm actually having to leave here.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening? And so there's a threat to the promise, and the characters are about to place the promise in jeopardy, which is a pattern we're going to see for the rest of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
But the characters themselves are not the main character ever, and that's always the good thing.
Yep.
Yahweh is going to remain faithful. So Abram travels as a refugee in a foreign and powerful land. And the Israelites who were reading this story would understand what Egypt symbolized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we see it way more fleshed out in later stories of this like symbol of just sin, basically.
Mm-hmm. And power and greed. And,
yeah.
Because Israel was sandwiched in between two really big empires pretty much through their whole existence.
The Assyrians and the Egyptians?
Well, three empires. You had like the Assyrians to the northeast, you had the Babylonians to the east, and then you had the Egyptians to the southwest.
Yeah.
And then you had like the Phoenicians kind of on the west. They were never isolated. There was always bigger empires, right. And they were kind of like the crossroad country that everybody would travel through.
Right, and these empires were always trying to expand.
Yeah, and it's like Judea was a really important trading route. Mm. So whoever could occupy that would have more assets to be able to move freely through this and that. I'm not great at like political history, so that's kind of as far as my knowledge goes. But they would understand the power and the might of Egypt and what that represented. And Sarai is said to be a Yepet Mara.
A Yepet Mara?
Yepet Mara.
What does that mean?
It means a beautiful phenomenon.
Oh. Hello.
So,
a beautiful phenomenon.
Go home and tell your loved one that
I'm going to have to use that one to Kristen. Like, Kristen, you are a beautiful phenomenon. You are a yetetner.
Yepet Mara.
Yepet Mara. Yepet Mara.
Yepet Mara, which means beautiful phenomenon. And if we know anything about ancient history, is that really beautiful women were really sought after by powerful men.
Yeah.
Did you ever read the Iliad?
Oh, yeah, totally. Bye, guys.
So you think of, like, Helen of Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a whole entire war was fought over just a beautiful woman leaving her king husband to be with, like, somebody else. And so...
Makes sense. I do the same thing.
So powerful men at that time believed that anything that was desirable belonged to them. So that's another taking of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Abraham, while powerful, is not as powerful as Egypt. So he's like scared.
It's like, and it's also like the sons of God seeing the daughters of men beautiful, taking them.
Mm-hmm.
And like those powers working in these evil type figures.
Yeah. And Abram knows that powerful men, especially Pharaoh, will want Sarai. And if they want somebody, they'll take it. And we see that in the David story with Bathsheba.
Yep.
So the pattern's already being set there as well.
It's all patterns, man.
When people see that something's good, they do bad things.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting pattern, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's like, and I think that's like a lot of the, you know, quote, sin we see is good passions that are misdirected, right?
So this is the first time we see Abram maybe not trust Yahweh so much. Because if Yahweh has promised him an heir and he's promised him the land, then obviously in the end, Sarai is going to be all right.
Yep.
So he sees a problem, and Abram decides to take from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil right here.
Yeah.
He sees a problem, and his solution is a half lie.
Yeah. Because Sarai is his sister-ish.
It's like half-sister or something like that. I don't want to get into all that.
but he's lying by not saying that she's his wife.
Yes. And so we have to ask the question, is this... does Abram have the right to risk Sarai to save himself? Is he being shady here?
I think it's shady. I vote shady.
I vote shady as well.
All right, two for shady.
But the Bible never actually answers whether he has acted in a shady manner, because things end up going his way anyway. And I think with our Western minds, we have trouble with that sometimes.
Because
we want these to be morality tales, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. That's like how they use them in
Sunday
school.
You get what you deserve.
Yeah.
And what they do, and we never talked about that story in Sunday school.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like, he didn't trust the promise enough to stay true to his wife or to stay true to the promise. And so...
And it's almost like...
He's taking the promise into his own hands, essentially.
And he messes up, but God's still, like, is faithful. Mm-hmm. And there's this song that I was listening to that has this line that's like, stuck with me, where about, like, how God works in our lives. Where it's like, I forget the line now, but it's like, you know, God has this plan and call for us, but there's, like, room for error. and he's always going to call us higher. Mm-hmm. But like, even if we mess up, mm-hmm. we're still like, we can still be within that plan.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the question of who's the main character of any of these stories.
That's true. It's not Abram.
It's not Abram. It's
Yahweh.
As much as we want to make it.
But, yeah.
Yeah. It's always about how Yahweh relates to the people through whom Yahweh is pursuing the world through.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good line.
Yeah. Put it on a t-shirt. Sell it. But here's the crazier thing, is right. that this little story right here is actually paralleling the whole story of Israel being delivered from Egypt in the Exodus story. Mm. Think about it. So, Israel comes to Egypt because of famine.
Yep.
So you think that Jacob and his sons come down to Joseph mm-hmm. from the Joseph story. So yep. the end of the Joseph story. And they have initial blessing. They multiply, they're fruitful. But then something goes wrong. Plagues come upon Pharaoh. Doesn't yep. it say that he's plagued?
Yep.
Right here. Plagues come upon Pharaoh. Pharaoh calls up the head figure and sends them on their way with plunder.
Yeah. And it's like Israel's often personified, or that image of like the bride of Yahweh, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, take your wife and go. Like, Israel is the wife in that scenario.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
Patterns, man.
Yeah.
maybe we should... Should our podcast just be called Patterns?
I mean, at this point, I don't know, because I'm realizing that there's so many more patterns that I haven't even, like, discovered.
Yeah. So, I didn't discover this one myself. I'm not that smart.
Yeah, you
it's,
are.
It's in a book called The Pentateuch is Narrative by John Salehammer. And he has this whole chart, like, going through, like, lists of, like, 14 things where, like, this story right here parallels the end of Genesis into Exodus.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's...
That's legit.
It's mind-blowing. And so the whole of God's plan is contained within this tiny story right here, like a pack of dynamite.
Yeah, just like
concise,
but then gonna be expanded on later.
Yeah. So why is the author being provocative in the way he's writing this? Why is he not answering the questions we want answered? Why is he telling it in this way?
I guess. I mean, it can't just be for the sake of being provocative.
No.
I mean, this is just what? Because God is mysterious?
That's what I like about the Bible, though, is that I think in the vagaries is where we meet and actually have to converse with the God that we're worshiping.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, because it's not just meant to be like... this straightforward, all your answers are here. There's no need for a relationship with the actual creator of the universe.
Mm-hmm. So we're people of the book, but not in the way that most people would think.
Yeah. And I think it's like these stories are kind of meant to show like themes mm-hmm. and show like how God works. But we're meant to like chew on them. I think the way that we really get something out of them is not just by straight reading, mm-hmm. but by like sitting with them.
Yeah.
With each other, with God. Just
yeah. It's the concept of Jewish meditation literature, right?
Yep.
So the Israelites came from a culture where this was what they dwelled upon. Like, this is what they thought about, and that was what they would do, is they would sit and contemplate. And it even says in Psalm 1, like, blessed is he who meditates on the scriptures.
Yeah.
Day and night. They had this, the way they would read it too is they would be with the story and they would mutter to themselves. So they never read just in their minds. They would be under their breath.
Like, right. I think that's the word in Hebrew, right, for meditate.
Uh-huh.
It's like muttering, uh-huh. mutter over.
Yeah. And so it's like they're embodying these stories within themselves. That's something, I don't know if we'll have time today, but something that I've been exploring just in my own life and the book that I'm writing is the question of how do stories, if we live into stories, how do they affect the way we live?
Yeah.
And I think that I'm not an expert or have any authority to talk about what that means yet, but I can say... David and I have been speaking at this church. We've had some speaking engagements at this church, at this local church recently. And even when we're not talking about these stories right here, the work that we've put into the prologue we have seen play out in these New Testament narratives mm-hmm. that we're talking about. Does that make sense?
No, totally. Because it really is like the foundation of like the core themes that you're going to see played out. Like, there's really so much packed into this first part of like Genesis. It's crazy. I didn't even really fully realize until we got into it. And I still don't even fully realize, I think.
No, I think that's good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad that there's something. I have this like sense that there's something else there that I'm not quite getting yet.
Yeah, so then you can go back to it.
I can go back to it.
Yeah.
And I think that is part of growing faith, is realizing, okay, I've got one thing answered, but that opens up five more questions. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know if interesting is the right way to put it, but like, it does like keep it alive and like full of mystery and full of wonder and full of like,
yeah, definitely. It's like a river versus like stagnant water.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like it's a cool way that God reveals himself, right? Because mm-hmm. you're like, oh man, not only is he there's so much packed in about him, but he has allowed humans to use artistry and like really clever writing to reveal who he is, because he's allowing them to be the humans he created them to be.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm so deep. It's not
even deep. We need that deep button.
Yeah. So I think we've covered everything that we need to cover today pretty much, which is going to be one of our shorter podcasts, which I'm okay with.
Yeah, definitely.
Next week's going to be a little bit longer because the narrative itself has no break for like two or three chapters. Mm. This one had a good clean break here at the end of like passing from one point to the next. So we see here that Abraham is not the perfect seed, but he is a seed that is trying to be faithful.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not the seed that we're waiting for, but we do know that he's going to continue the hope for the seed to come. So what is the significance of this story to you? Mm. And how can you, are you able to tie it into everything that we've talked about, and then the Messiah, which Genesis knows nothing about, that the Genesis doesn't know anything about the Messiah, but it is setting up the, I can't word this right. It is propelling us forward towards it, even if the author didn't know what he was actually saying here.
But the author might have.
He might have.
You know, like,
maybe not in like a concrete way that we know about Jesus now, but they knew something was.
It's like, if you think of it more, it's just like the messianic promise mm-hmm. of like redemption.
Yeah.
Right. It's definitely going in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, just kind of my significant takeaway from this story today.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, we touched on how Abram wrestled with his faith and like made choices that were not necessarily in faith.
Mm-hmm.
But still, God was able to use that as part of like the plan to propel his life forward.
Yeah. Which is really interesting. My takeaway really is that these stories of this family are not the ends in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're part of a larger picture. David likes to mess with me because he feels like I bring up Lord of the Rings a ton, and I do.
Yeah.
But one of the things I love about Lord of the Rings, and Tolkien talks about this when he writes Lord of the Rings, is that the significance doesn't lie in the story itself. The significance lies in the fact that this is one tiny story within a realm of larger stories.
Yeah.
And so, like, he had built this whole world. He called it subcreation. I think we've talked about this a little bit. He believed that if we were created by a creative God, then we are meant to create and honor him with that.
Yeah.
And so he took that concept of the Bible, of being these little stories contained within a large narrative. And you see that in Lord of the Rings all the time. There's so much history infused into it, and even the creation story, their devil character Melkor, the god Eru Iluvatar, and the Tolkien universe creates the world through music, and he writes the symphony, and he invites his heavenly host in to sing it with him. Mm-hmm. But Melkor wants to write his own music to it. And so he creates a discord, and what Ilúvatar does is he changes the music to accompany that.
Yeah, that's, I think that's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, it's like, whoa, that's super poetic.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, shoot, like, the whole music is ruined. It's like, I'm going to take what you did and, like, make it beautiful.
Yeah, or even, like, the creation of the dwarves. The dwarves were not part of the plan in Tolkien universe. I don't remember who created them, but they created them out of the want to create life apart from Eru. And they created these monstrosities, and what Eru did was come in and breathe his breath into them and allowed them to be part of the plan. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so obviously don't take Tolkien as gospel, but I think it is a mirror image of, like, what his understanding of this biblical narrative.
Yeah, exactly. I think is. Tolkien is somebody who meditated a lot on God and, like, his story and the Bible and just, like, how he works in the universe and tried to express that in his own creative way.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. That's why I cry at the end of every movie.
Yeah. It's too bad that Harry Potter is just way better than Lord of the Rings.
Listen. I like Harry Potter, so I'm not going to argue
with
you.
Hobbit is the best movie.
All right, we're going to end right here, folks. So we're going to end with a question. Can Yahweh keep his promise?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yeah, we're going to leave it rhetorical. Right. Can Yahweh keep his promise? Can Abram live in the reality of the promise, which hinges on the promise of an heir, or will he keep taking matters into his own hands?
It's going to
be
next week.
Yeah, come find out next week. Seriously, guys, I'm so glad to be back. It feels like we're at home again. It didn't take us too long to get back into it.
No, man, we got right back into the flow.
Yeah, I'm excited for this, and hopefully the new format will feel less broken apart now. I know we saved, like, 2 hours on the way we formatted this.
Oh, totally, yeah.
So
it only took us, like, an hour to do it.
We appreciate all the kind words people have sent us and the encouragements that we've heard. So,
And the gift baskets. Thank you for the gift.
And the house.
And the house, yeah. And the new car, thank you.
The yacht.
Yeah.
We don't deserve any of this. We're getting it back. None of this ever happened.
Bye, Andrew.
All right. Hayden signing out.
And David signing out. See ya.